I got so tired of her threats and complaints that I sucked it up and gave in. I've been to many quinceañeras, and they're all the same. Gross dresses, bland food, and odious music. My cousin Yvette played nothing but reggaeton at her party, and then did a choreographed dance in an outrageous sequined outfit. I almost died of embarrassment for her. I typically sneak a book inside and hide it under the table and pretend that no one can see me reading. But this time I can't because I'll be the star of this disaster. I keep thinking of ways to get the party canceled. Shave my head and eyebrows, get a face tattoo, break my own legs, give myself the flu by licking a pole on the bus. But the truth is that Ama would probably wheel me in on my deathbed. There is no escaping this. I understand that this isn't necessarily meant as a punishment for me. Even though Ama doesn't understand me at all, I know she's not doing it to make me miserable. I'm not that naive. I know she feels guilty for not giving Olga a party because we were too broke at the time. But why should I have to suffer because of it? I kept asking Ama where she was going to find the money to pay for it, but she insisted it was none of my business. A few weeks ago, though, I overheard her and Apa talking, and it turns out that Olga had accumulated a few thousand dollars in life insurance while she was working at the doctor's office. She also had some money in her savings account. Ama got the checks in the mail a few months after Olga died. Why couldn't they put that in a college fund, or at least buy an air conditioner so we don't melt in the summer? Why couldn't they find a better apartment than this roach-infested dump? On Sunday morning, Ama makes me help her with the party favors. We sit at the kitchen table covered with tulle, figurines, ribbon, and candied almonds. I don't know who would want such a gaudy souvenir. The candy is hardly even edible. What a giant waste of money, time, and resources. I look closely at the porcelain quinceañeras and realize that they're all blonde and their skin is literally white. They almost look like zombies. They didn't have brown ones? I ask, holding one of the figurines up to the light. This doesn't look like me at all.
That's all they had, Ama says.
I want to throw them onto the floor and stomp on them, crushing their stupid little faces. But I do my best to keep calm because I know it's important to Ama. Where did you get these?
La Garra. Now stop asking so many questions and get to work.
I should have figured. Everything from my party seems to come from the flea market. After hours of gluing, stuffing, and tying, we hear the doorbell ring.
Probably Jehovah's Witnesses, Ama says. Tell them to stop bothering us. We're Catholic. I've told them hundreds of times.
But it's Lorena, wearing bright pink leggings and a furry white hoodie. What do you want?
I'm sorry I was being such a bitch, she says, looking down at my bunny slippers.
I can't stand this anymore. I hate it that we're not talking. I cross my arms.
Whatever.
Look, I said I'm sorry. What else do you want? Why did you have to say all those things about me? Do you really think I'm stuck up because I don't want to have sex with any of the guys at school?
No, of course not. I was just being stupid. But sometimes you are too judgmental. I get frustrated with you.
I don't even know if I can argue with that. I do dislike most people and most things, which is something Lorena doesn't understand.
Aren't you sorry? You were a bitch, too.
Yeah, I guess I'm sorry. But I hate Wanga, and I don't want to hang out with him anymore.
Are you a homophobe or something?
Seriously? How many times have we gone to the Pride Parade?
Who introduced you to Rocky Horror Picture Show?
And the L word? Get out of my face with that.
Okay, okay. sometimes Wanga can be a little bit of a sangrón. Sangrón. That's exactly right. The word is usually used to describe someone who rubs you the wrong way, a jerk or a douche. I think it means someone's blood is too heavy. Or maybe it's that they have too much blood. A little bit? All right, all right. You've made your point. Wanga says that you intimidate him, though. Just try to be nice, okay? He's really fucked up right now. What do you mean? His dad. He beats him up. You know, because he's gay. What? Are you serious? Yeah. He calls him a joto and tells him he's going to burn in hell. There's some weird religion. I forgot what it's called. Lorena taps her chin with her forefinger. Well, whatever. They even tried performing an exorcism on him. Or some shit like that. That's why he's always running away. Oh my God. Really? Now I feel guilty. It's okay. Just try to be nice from now on. Now get out of those stupid slippers and let's get some pizza. I'll pay. Though we can go anywhere to get a slice, we take the train all the way to the north side because we're always looking for excuses to get out of our neighborhood. Life is much too boring otherwise. I order 3 slices, 2 for me and 1 for Lorena. 2? Seriously? Lorena raises her eyebrows. I can eat 3, but didn't want to embarrass you. We sit at the only table available, next to an unattractive family. The 3 little kids are yelling and squirming all over the seats, and their sad, sloppy parents just ignore them. I never want to get married, I tell Lorena. Look at that guy. He's wearing sweatpants with elastic on the ankles. Jesus, it's making me lose my appetite. I don't want to get married either. My mom and Jose Luis are such idiots, Lorena says, putting down her pizza. I've never heard her talk about her mother that way.
Give me juice! Give me juice!
The toddler next to us screams, his little red face smeared with grease and tomato sauce. Oh my God, I mouth to Lorena. She just shakes her head. I'm still hungry when I finish both slices, but I tell my stomach to shut the hell up. As we sit in silence, I feel sadness spreading inside me. I never know what to do when this happens. I try to convince myself that everything is okay, but I can't. It must show on my face because Lorena asks me what's wrong. Do you ever hate your life? Because I do. Like, all the time. I know it's messed up, but sometimes I wish I were dead too. Why does everything have to be so hard? Why does everything have to hurt so much? My throat aches like I'm about to cry, which startles me. I close my eyes for a second. Jesus, Julia! What the fuck? How can you say that? Lorena slaps me on the arm. She looks angry. I don't know. I rub my eyes. Sometimes I wonder if I'll make it to college. I mean, I can't take this anymore. It's not like my life was great before, but then Olga dies and everything turns to complete crap. Why, though? I don't understand. Nothing ever makes sense. I never get what I want. You're so close, Julia. You're almost out of here. You know you're smart. You're not going to live like this forever. Yeah, I guess, I say, though I don't entirely believe her. Please don't ever say anything stupid like that again, okay? Promise? Okay, I'm fine. I take a sip of my water. I know I should change the subject. So I tried getting Olga's transcripts the other day. Where? The community college.
For what, though?
Because I've been realizing how weird it was that she never seemed close to getting her associate's degree. There's something that isn't right. I don't know what it is, but I have this feeling that won't go away. It's driving me crazy. You're always so paranoid. Just because you found some underwear doesn't mean anything. I told you already. All girls wear thongs.
Well, except you.
Yeah, because they're stupid and uncomfortable. I pause. And what about the hotel key? She could have found it at work and used it as a bookmark or something. Unlikely. I hadn't seen her read a book in years. And it was in an envelope. I think your imagination is messing with you. Some people are ordinary. I doubt your sister was living some interesting life. The girl was sweet and all, but she wasn't exactly fascinating. She never even went out. You need to stop worrying so much about Olga. I'm sorry, but she's gone, and there's nothing you can do about that. You need to focus on your own life now. Even though Lorena is right, I already know I'm not going to listen to her. Can you ask Wanga to get Jasmine's number from Maribel? You know, Olga's friend from the masquerade. I keep thinking she might know something. Lorena rolls her eyes. How's she going to help you figure anything out? The toddler next to us starts screaming again, and his parents don't bother to shut him up. I don't know. Maybe Olga said something to her. She probably doesn't know anything, but I have to at least try. Promise you'll ask?
Fine. Lorena sighs. But I really don't see the point.
As I walk home from Lorena's, I notice the house on the end of her block is covered with red and black graffiti so scraggly and lazily painted, it pisses me off. If they're going to ruin someone else's property, they should at least try to make it beautiful. What did they paint that with? Their butts? When I cross the street on the next block, a car pulls up next to me. The driver lowers the window.
Hey, girl.
Sometimes I yell things back when guys try to talk to me, but I know I probably shouldn't because what if they come out of their cars and kick my ass?
I said, hi. Didn't you hear me?
The driver barks.
I have something to show you. You know, 'cause you have nice tits.
I don't even know how he can make that sort of assessment with my jacket and scarf.
Yeah, didn't you hear him, bitch?
The passenger has joined in now.
Wonderful.
I'm sweating, even though it's so chilly I can see my breath. It's technically spring, but winter still has us in its clutches. Typical Chicago. The icy dampness in my armpits reminds me of the time in health class we learned that sweat from stress smells worse than the kind your body produces when you exercise. It's because of some sort of hormone. I can picture the stink lines hovering above me right now. I look around in case there's anyone nearby, but I only see a couple of kids playing catch down the street. The car follows me as I walk. Halfway down the block, an old man comes out of his house. I stop in front of him, not knowing what to say, the words all coiled inside my mouth. What can this frail viejito do to help me?
What's wrong, mija? Are you okay? You look like you saw el cucuy.
His sunken eyes look worried, and I have a sudden urge to press myself against his withered little body and bury my face in his shoulder. Maybe it's because I never knew either of my grandfathers. When I was a kid, I assumed that El Cucuy was a hideous monster that hid under the stairs, not an actual person.
I thought he was a creature covered in matted fur, his face grotesque and contorted, with giant fangs and bloody eyes. I was wrong. If only terror could be that simple. I point to the car, which has now made a full stop. The men stare at us, and I notice the driver has a neck tattoo, but I can't tell what it says. I think it might be a woman's name. How romantic.
What do you want with this young lady?
The old man yells, shaking his fist. He must be at least 80. A light wind could probably knock him down and shatter his bones.
You got this old dude to protect you, bitch? I could kill you both.
The driver laughs.
Don't worry. I'll find you again.
The car speeds away.
Are you okay?
The old man asks. I nod.
Did you need to call your parents or the police?
No, I'm fine. I'm only a few blocks away.
I'm not letting you walk alone,
he says, shaking his head. I wish he wouldn't, because if Ama sees us, it will be difficult to explain. But how can I argue with him? Maybe he saved my life. At the very least, he probably saved me from having to see that guy's penis. We walk in silence until we get to my building. Here it is, I say. May God repay you. Though I don't believe in anything, I know it's important to sound religious when talking to old people. It feels wrong not to pretend after he protected me from those dirtbags.
May God protect you,
he says, making the sign of the cross the way my grandma does when we leave Mexico. She calls it la bendición. On Monday, I get Maribel's number from Wanga so I can call her for Jasmine's number. What I like about Maribel is that she doesn't even bother asking why I need it. In fact, she says it's none of her business, which is perfect because I don't feel like explaining. I can't stand nosy people. I wish everyone would leave me alone. I guess it's ironic that I'm all up in Olga's business now, but she's dead, so maybe it shouldn't count. Everything about Maribel conveys confidence and independence, like she's constantly giving the world the finger. I've never met anyone like her.
Honey, I hope you find what you're looking for,
she says in her gravelly voice, and hangs up. I get inside my closet and dial Jasmine's number. It rings and rings, and then it goes to her voicemail. I don't want to be annoying, but I feel like I have to talk to her, and I'm tired of waiting. I dial again. Maybe she thinks I'm a telemarketer. Right when I'm about to hang up, she answers. Hi, Jasmine. This is, Julia, Olga's sister. I don't know why I'm so nervous. Oh, hi. How did you get my number? She doesn't sound annoyed, just surprised. I can hear a dog barking in the background. She tells it to shut up. Through Maribel? Huh. Okay, so what's up? What can I do for you? I realize I probably should have been nicer when I saw her at the masquerade. I just didn't feel like explaining about my sister. That's not really the kind of news I'm eager to deliver, especially during a party. Plus, I was drunk. Plus, Jasmine has a very irritating personality. I never liked her, and apparently neither did Ama. She never knew when to shut up. Always going on and on about pointless things. Yeah, so I was wondering if you could tell me more about what Olga said when you saw her. Do you remember what year it was? That was a long time ago. I don't remember. Why do you want to know, anyway? Jasmine sounds suspicious. Because, well, How do I explain this to Jasmine without telling her what I found? It's none of her damn business, after all. There are some things I'm trying to piece together, and I'm hoping something Olga said will help me. I don't get it. How? Can you just please help me? I mean, my sister is dead. Jasmine is trying my patience once again. I hear Amma walk past my room. I hope she doesn't come in here and ask me why I'm sitting in my closet. I don't remember exactly when. It was like 4 years ago, I think, Jasmine says. Before or after graduation? I really don't remember. So you don't remember the month or anything? Jasmine sighs. No. Was it hot or cold? It was spring, I think. Or was it summer? What was she wearing? I don't remember. Jesus, Jasmine is useless. What did she tell you about the guy she was in love with? Did she tell you his name? Maybe, but it was so long ago. I don't know. The dog barks again. Someone slams a door. Was it Pedro? She dated him senior year. Look, Julia, I'm telling you I don't remember. I wish I could help you, but I can't. Did she say anything else? Like, where she met him, or anything, really? All she said was that she was in love, and that he was amazing, and she kept telling me how happy she was. That's all I remember. I know this isn't Jasmine's fault, but I'm still frustrated. That's it? Yes, that's it. Wait. She did say something about how he had a good job or something, I think. Unless I'm not remembering it right. What kind of job? Pedro worked at Little Caesars, so it can't be him. I don't think there is a person on this planet who would want to make those loathsome pizzas. I don't remember. I'm sorry. Like I said, it was a long time ago. Are you absolutely sure? Positive. I wish I could help you more. All right, well, thank you anyway, I guess. If you think of anything else, can you please call me back at this number? Really, it's important. Sure. Take care. I lean back into my clothes and take some deep breaths. Why does it always feel like life is a stupid puzzle I'll never figure out? Chapter 13. With these majestic violins, you'd think we were in some castle on the English moor instead of a dingy church basement in Chicago. If I'm going to be forced to dance, I want to do it to the Smiths or Susie and the Banshees. But Amma refused, of course. What would the family think? And why do I have to always listen to Satan music? I feel like a fat sausage in this tight and tacky dress covered in frills, ruffles, and sequins. I can hardly breathe in my girdle, which I bet is rearranging my internal organs. Girdle. Such an ugly word. A word as gross as what it does. Amma even chose the worst color imaginable for my skin. Peach. It's as if she did it on purpose. I'm the bad daughter who didn't deserve a quinceañera, but my parents wanted to throw a party for my dead sister. It didn't matter that the last things in the world I wanted were to pile my hair into a bunch of stiff curls on top of my head, wear this disgusting dress, and pretend to be happy in front of the whole family right before my 16th birthday. What a joke. Thousands of dollars down the toilet. And here I am, dancing to this awful waltz with all of my boy cousins, some of whom I hardly know, most of whom don't even like me. It took weeks to learn the dance, and now I'm forgetting all the steps. I'm not graceful or smooth like I'm supposed to be, and Junior, my chambellan de honor, looks angry when he spins me around and I lose my rhythm. Pablo sighs and shakes his head. I try forcing a smile to ease the tension, but it seems as if they all want to kill me right now. Finally, the dance is over, and everyone claps. I bet they just feel sorry for me because I ruined the whole thing. Now I have to sit in a chair someone has placed in the middle of the dance floor. It's time to give my doll away to my little cousin and change into a pair of heels, which is ridiculous because I haven't played with dolls since I was 7, and I'll never wear high heels again in my life. My parents approach me with a pair of shiny white shoes on a satin pillow. They slip off my flat Mary Janes and replace them with the new heels. I want to crawl into a hole and die, but I make myself smile, and everyone claps. Then my cousin Pilar brings me a doll, and I walk over to my baby cousin Gabby, who is wearing the same exact peach dress as I am and is spinning in circles all around the dance floor. I guess the idea is that she's supposed to be me as a little girl. More clapping. The DJ asks for a moment of silence for Olga, and Ama clasps her hands together and begins to cry. Apa looks down at the floor. I just stand there like a stump of a person. Gabby runs to her mom, and I wobble over to Apa for the father-daughter dance. I don't understand why we have to do this. Pretend I'm daddy's little girl when he hasn't paid attention to me in years. He doesn't know anything about me. If you ask him what my favorite band or food is, he couldn't tell you. I can smell the beer wafting from his clothes and skin. Standing so close to him makes me uncomfortable. I don't remember the last time he's touched me. As he twirls me around the dance floor, everyone is smiling like crazy, as if this were the most precious thing they've ever seen. Some of my tías are crying, which probably has little to do with me and everything to do with Olga.
Are you enjoying your party?
Apa asks. Yes. I lie.
Good.
Finally, the song winds down and the show is over. According to this tradition, I'm a woman now. I'm available to men. I can wear makeup and high heels. I can dance. But if this is what it means to be a woman, maybe I don't want to be one. I sit down and wipe the sweat from my face with a napkin. I'm sweating so hard I think I can smell my own crotch beneath all the layers of fabric. I bet my makeup has melted off. I decided to invite Wanga to my party in my attempt to be less of an asshole. His parents kicked him out again, and he's been staying on his cousin's couch. My life is shitty, but at least I have a home, I guess. It makes me wonder how Ama would react if I were gay. Maybe in some sort of weird way she would be relieved, since she's so afraid of men. Wanga is wearing a suit one size too big and a skinny purple tie. He runs to me and kisses both cheeks. He says that's how they do it in Europe. Oh my God, that dress is a monstrosity, but you still look beautiful, he says. Right, Lorena? That face, I mean, wow. Who did your makeup? My cousin Vanessa. My mom said I couldn't be trusted to do it myself. Lorena laughs. Yeah, the makeup is bomb, but the dress... I know, I say. I can't stand to look at myself. I ask Lorena to help me with my dress while I pee. She smells sweet like perfume and sweat. Her makeup is smeared under her eyes, and her giant orange-blonde curls are starting to fall flat. My dress drags on the wet and dirty floor of the handicapped stall. I ask Lorena to unzip me for a second because it's been smashing my stomach and boobs all day and I can't take it anymore. Ama insisted it had to fit this way because otherwise it would be indecent. I try loosening my girdle, but I'm completely strapped in with a series of hooks and buttons. Can this be considered child abuse? Tia Milagros comes into the bathroom as we exit the stall. I don't know how it's possible for a person to look worse when they dress up, but she's managed to do it. Her green dress is short and exposes the varicose veins crisscrossing up her legs. I try not to roll my eyes, but it's become a reflex whenever I see her.
Ay, Julia, what a nice party. I bet Olga is so happy for you right now.
She sighs. Olga is dead. I know I should probably shut up, but I'm tired of everyone pretending Olga is an angel looking over us. Tia Milagros shakes her head as she looks at herself in the mirror.
Qué malcriada! What happened to you? You weren't always so angry, so... I don't know.
What? I wasn't always so what, Tia? I feel the loud music vibrating all of my insides like jelly. Lorena's eyes open wide, and she sucks in a big gulp of air. She knows I'm about to pop off.
I don't know. Never mind.
Tia Milagros shakes her head and applies another coat of her light orange lipstick in the mirror. Just say it, I insist. What is so terrible about me? Why does everyone treat me like I'm a disappointment? Who are you to judge me, huh? Tell me, like you're so great, all bitter because your husband left your ass years ago. Get over it already. Tia Milagros's eyes glisten. She presses her mouth shut as if to keep herself from saying anything else.
Holy shit, Julia,
Lorena whispers as Tia Milagros storms out of the bathroom. Lorena makes me dance with her cousin Danny, who I've never seen before. I don't even know how he got in because he wasn't invited. Before I can protest, Lorena pushes me right into him on the dance floor. Danny is not my type at all. Shaved head, shiny shirt, snakeskin boots, and a gold chain that looks like a rosary. Plus, he smells like vinegar. That's the opposite of what I like, and Lorena knows it. She's always making fun of me for liking dorky white guys in the movies we watch, and tries to set me up with dudes I would never in a million years touch with a latex glove. Danny doesn't say much, and neither do I. I can barely keep up with the fast cumbia. As Danny spins and jerks me around, I can feel Ama's eyes hooked to my back. According to this party, I can dance with boys now. But she doesn't seem happy about this. I keep thinking of Tia Milagros the rest of the night. She had it coming, but I know I'm screwed. Gossiping is her favorite pastime. If she had a dating profile, it would probably read something like, "My hobbies include knitting, cooking, teasing my bangs, talking shit, and collecting polyester dresses that look terrible on my body." Toward the end of the night, Angie comes in with a giant yellow gift bag. She looks so much better than the last time I saw her. Her curly hair is in a loose bun, and her green eyes are outlined with dark eyeliner. Her blue wrap dress hugs her body perfectly. I pretend I don't see her, but she walks toward me anyway. "Happy birthday." "Congratulations," she says, handing me the bag. "It's not my birthday, and I'm practically 16. "Oh, yeah. Then why?" Angie scrunches her face. I don't feel like explaining. "Why are you here? I know that's rude, but I'm still angry." "Your mom invited me." "Yeah, I guess the party is more for Olga than it is for me." "What do you mean?" My little cousin Gabby runs between us. "Forget it." "Well, I just wanted to say congrats." "How nice of you. I'm so delighted." I'm not entirely sure if Angie knows I'm being sarcastic. "No problem." Angie looks at the door like she wants to leave.
Did Olga have a boyfriend?
I say before she walks away.
Or girlfriend?
What?
You heard me. Why did you say that thing about her love life the last time I saw you? Did she?
First of all, I didn't say anything about Olga having a love life. You put those words in my mouth.
Second of all, you're her sister.
Don't you think you would know? How would she be able to keep that from your family? You really think Olga would be able to have some sort of secret relationship without your mother finding out? You know better than anyone that you can't get anything past your mom.
What do you mean by that?
Why would you say secret relationship?
That's really freaking suspicious.
Angie sighs.
There's something you're not telling me. I know it. That's why you're acting so weird.
Calm down, Julia. One of the things I hate most in life is people telling me to calm down, as if I'm some out-of-control lunatic who isn't entitled to have feelings.
Don't talk to me like that. Just get out of my face. Just leave, okay?
Angie walks away, and I grip the bag until my knuckles turn white. I remind myself to breathe. When I turn around, she's hugging Ama. She's probably telling her that she stopped by only to drop off the gift, that she has another obligation. After the music stops and people start gathering the leftovers, I see Tia Milagros talking to my parents. Apa furrows his brow and shakes his head. Ama covers her mouth with her hand. I sit at an empty table and eat the rest of my cake. It's peach, the same color as my dress, and so sweet it makes me sick. But I keep shoveling it into my mouth anyway. Maybe I can poison myself with sugar. We ride home in a thick fog of silence. The apartment smells funky because we forgot to take out the garbage before we left. Apa flicks on the light, and the roaches scurry in all directions looking for dark corners to hide in. We do the cockroach dance, which consists of stomping all over the kitchen floor because they have a party whenever we're not home. This time, I have to lift my dress and kill them with my new white shoes. When we're done, Ama sweeps them up and flushes them down the toilet, in case some of them still have babies inside them. Usually, she mops the floor with bleach or Pine Sol, but it doesn't seem like she's going to do that tonight. Ama comes back from the bathroom, and they both turn toward me.
Your aunt told me what you said to her in the bathroom.
She comes closer.
All this money we spend on your party, and you act like this and embarrass us?
It was her fault, I say, looking away. She never knows when to shut her mouth.
Is this how we raised you, cabrona? To disrespect your elders? Who do you think you are?
Apa yells suddenly. This is probably the most he said to me in years.
Julia, I didn't raise my children to be disrespectful. Why are you like this? What have I done to deserve this?
Ama keeps using the plural, even though I'm the only one left. She turns to Apa.
Rafael, I don't know what to do with your daughter anymore.
Which is what she says when she's mad at me. Suddenly, I no longer belong to her. Apa doesn't say anything, as if he's so angry that words are useless to him. Ama sighs and wrings her hands.
Maybe Bigotes is right. Maybe this country is ruining you.
Like living in Mexico would fix anything, I say. My life sucks, but it would suck even harder in Mexico, and you know it. I wonder if Ama is going to cry, hit me, or both, because she looks like I annihilated her. And it startles me. Ama just shakes her head.
You know, Julia, maybe if you knew how to behave yourself, to keep your mouth shut, your sister would still be alive. Have you ever thought about that?
she finally says it. She says what her big sad eyes were telling me all along.
After summer break. Chapter 14. I meet Mr. Ingman after school every Thursday so he can help me prepare for the ACTs and apply to colleges. He insists, even though he isn't my teacher anymore now that I'm a senior. I told him that my counselor was already helping me, but he said she didn't know her ass from her elbow. His exact words. He's one of the smartest people I've ever known, so I would be stupid to refuse. And after spending the entire summer cleaning houses with Amma, I'm almost happy to be back in school, working my brain instead of my hands. My grades last year were okay. I managed to pull them up at the end and mostly got B's, but I'm still worried about getting into the colleges I want. This semester, I'm determined to kick some serious ass, though. I'm back with a vengeance, bitches. I'm applying to 3 schools in New York, 2 in Boston, and 1 in Chicago. Mr. Ingman helped me pick out diverse schools with good English programs. Even though I don't want to stay here, he says I have to apply to at least 1 school in the state, just in case. But I know I have to go far away. I love my parents, of course, and I feel guilty for wanting to leave them, but living here would be too hard. I need to grow and explore, and they won't let me. I feel like I'm being kept under a magnifying glass. Mr. Ingman is showing me all the ins and outs of college applications, which I appreciate because I have no idea what I'm doing. Some of the schools charge up to $90, and since I'm what they like to call low income, Mr. Ingman is teaching me how to apply for waivers. Though I had to fork over most of what I made working with Emma, I was able to save $274, which should at least cover my flight if I end up choosing a school on the East Coast. I've been in desperate need of a new pair of shoes, but I refuse to touch any of that money. According to Mr. Ingman, I have to emphasize the fact that my parents are still undocumented.
Admission committees love that stuff, he insists.
But it's a secret, I say. My parents told us we weren't supposed to tell anyone. What if I send in my application and then the school calls immigration and my parents get deported? Then what?
No one is going to deport them. That would be impossible.
But they're illegal, I whisper.
Undocumented, Mr. Ingman corrects me.
My family call themselves ilegales or mojados. No one says undocumented. They don't know about being politically correct.
It's a very stigmatizing word. I don't like it. Same with illegal aliens. That's even more repugnant.
Mr. Ingman shudders as if the words feel venomous inside his body. Fine. Undocumented. I finally give in. I grew up learning to be afraid of La Migra and listened to my parents and family members go on and on about papeles. For a long time, I didn't understand what was so important about these pieces of paper, but I eventually figured it out. My parents could have been sent back to Mexico at any moment, leaving me and Olga here to fend for ourselves. We probably would have ended up with one of our aunts with papers, like some of the kids at school, or we would have gone back to Mexico with our parents. I remember the raids in Apa's factory when I was little. La Migra shipped mojados back by the busload, separating families forever. It must have been some sort of miracle that these sweeps were never during his shift. Although Apa is only physically present most of the time, like some sort of household fixture, I can't imagine what it would be like to live without him. Like my parents, I've always been suspicious of white people, because they're the ones who call immigration, who are rude to you at stores and restaurants, who follow you when you're shopping. But I think Mr. Ingman is different. No other teacher has ever been this interested in me. Okay, how do you know for sure that they won't get deported? I insist one last time. Please, Julia, trust me. I've helped dozens of students like you get into college. We're in Chicago, not Arizona. That doesn't really happen here. Not like that. No one is going to read your essay and track your parents down. Plus, have I ever lied to you?
Not that I know of.
Mr. Ingman nods. Fair enough. But I wouldn't lead you astray. I really want you to go to school.
Why, though? I don't get it. Why do you care so much?
You were one of the best students I've ever had, and I want to see you do well. You have to get the hell out of this neighborhood. You have to go to school. You can become something great. I see it in you. You're a fantastic writer.
No one has ever said anything like this.
Come on, get writing. I don't have all evening,
Mr. Ingman says, looking at his watch.
You need to jot down some ideas, at the very least.
I stare at the giant world map, not knowing where to begin. What makes me interesting? What makes me who I am? What story does the world need to know? In 1991, my parents, Amparo Montenegro and Rafael Reyes, got married and left their hometown of Los Ojos, Chihuahua, in search of a better life. My sister Olga was born later that year. All they wanted was the American dream, but things didn't work out that way for them. Ama cleans houses, and Apa works in a candy factory. Life for us was already difficult, and then last year my sister was run over by a truck. We have a half day, so I take the train to the used bookstore in Wicker Park after school. I've saved a total of $17 from my lunch money in the last few weeks and should be able to buy 2 books. My stomach felt like it was eating itself those times I had nothing but a scoop of lumpy mashed potatoes, but it was worth it. If, when I become rich, I want a library so big that I'll need a ladder to reach all my books. I want first editions, too. I want ancient tomes that I have to handle with forceps and rubber gloves. I go to the poetry section first to see if they have any Adrienne Rich books. I read one of her poems in English class last week, and I haven't been able to get it out of my head. It just repeats and repeats. Sometimes I'm washing my hands or brushing my teeth, and there it is, just bouncing in my brain. I came to explore the wreck. The words are purposes. The words are maps. I'm so excited to find one of her books for only $6. I love the smell of old bookstores. Paper, knowledge, and probably mildew. I hate the cliche that you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, because covers say so much about what's inside. Take The Great Gatsby, for instance. The woman's melancholic face against the city lights in the distance is the perfect representation of the quiet misery of that era. Covers matter. Those who don't think so are full of crap. I mean, I wear band t-shirts for a reason. Lorena wears leopard print spandex for a reason. I fantasize about what the books I'll write one day will look like. I want colorful artwork on the covers, like a Jackson Pollock or Jean-Michel Basquiat painting. Or maybe I can use a haunting photograph by Francesca Woodman. There's one of her crawling on the floor in front of a mirror that would be perfect. I see an older edition of Leaves of Grass and hold it up to my face. It smells amazing, and it's only $6. I walk up to the third floor and find a table near the critical theory section. It's crammed, but there's one free chair left. After a few minutes, the woman next to me leaves, and a guy approaches and asks if he could sit down. He is tall with shaggy brown hair and is wearing a flannel shirt and tight, dark jeans. He's cute. Sure, I say, and bury my head in my book.
That's one of my favorites, he says.
Something between a croak and a squeak comes out of my mouth. I'm horrified. What? I finally manage to say. Are you talking to me?
Uh-huh. Leaves of grass. But that's probably not worth saying. Whoever doesn't like Walt Whitman is probably dead inside.
I can't believe this. Is this guy really talking to me about poetry right now? I would have to agree. He is indeed a master. He nods.
So, what's your favorite book?
I don't know. I mean, how do you decide? I love so many. The Awakening, 100 Years of Solitude, The Great Gatsby, Catcher in the Rye, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, The Bluest Eye. Poetry or prose? If poetry, then maybe Emily Dickinson. Or wait, maybe... Fuck. I don't know. I'm not sure why the question fills me with panic.
I love The Catcher in the Rye and The Great Gatsby. Haven't read 100 Years yet. Don't you think it's ironic that after the Gatsby movie, people started throwing 1920s parties? It's so stupid, romanticizing that time.
I laugh. People really threw parties? Like, flappers and shit?
Yeah, some of my mom's friends did it. I was like, wow, you totally missed the point of the book.
I doubt a person like me would have been allowed into those kinds of parties in the 1920s. Maybe I'd be in the kitchen or cleaning the bathrooms. I joke. He laughs.
Exactly. Like it was such a magical time. It probably was for what, 10 people?
What about you? What's your favorite book?
A Clockwork Orange.
I tried reading it once, but it made no damn sense. And the movie was so violent. I shudder.
Could be you're not giving it a chance. It's a critique, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Maybe I should read it again. The truth is, I'll never read it again because the book got on my nerves, but I want to keep the conversation going.
What's your name, anyway?
Julia? I don't know why my answer comes out sounding like a question, as if I don't know my own name.
I'm Connor, he says, and shakes my hand.
His eyes are brown and intense, like he's trying to figure something out. It's nice to meet you, I say. I'm so nervous I can hardly look at him. This is new and hazy territory for me. Guys never talk to me, unless you count the creeps on the street who whistle and say gross things about my body. The two of us sit there in awkward silence for several seconds. I look at a stack of books on the table and try to think of something witty, but my mind is blank. Do you ever smell books? I finally say.
What do you mean?
I mean, literally. Don't you like the way they smell? They're all so different. I once found one that smelled like cinnamon. I wonder if they kept it in a pantry. I always wonder about those kinds of things. Sometimes you can tell that they were kept in a basement because they have that dampness, you know? Crap. I can't believe that just came out of my mouth. He's going to think I'm a complete weirdo.
So... you're a book sniffer. Is that what you're telling me?
Connor pretends to be serious, as if I just told him I was a meth addict. He exhales loudly.
Wow.
I let out a yelp and cover my mouth. The other people at the table glare at us. I can't stop laughing.
Maybe you should go. Looks like you're having trouble controlling yourself.
He turns to the others at the table and shakes his head.
Sorry, guys. I think she's having an episode.
That makes me laugh even harder. I gather my things and Connor follows me downstairs. After I buy my books, we both walk outside. The sun is bright and makes me squint.
Are you okay now?
Connor puts his hand on my shoulder. It was your fault. You started it.
I pretend to be mad. If that's what you want to tell yourself. He shrugs. How about some coffee? Or some warm milk to calm you down?
I don't know.
I hesitate, even though I already know I'm going to say yes. Come on. It's the least I can do after all the trouble I've caused you.
Fine, I say. I guess you do owe me.
Connor takes me to a coffee shop bustling with hipsters and their expensive computers and gadgets. I imagine a giant spotlight on me as I enter, emphasizing my ancient jeans, torn sneakers, and greasy hair. I wish I could go back in time and take a shower and put on better clothes. But how would I have known this was going to happen? I was planning on being invisible today. We settle into a small table in the corner, near a man with a stupidly big mustache. How can a person walk around like that and expect to be taken seriously? The hideous thing almost reaches his ears. I keep wondering if this is a date, because technically I've never been on one before. The closest I ever came was that time at the lake with Ramiro, Carlos's cousin, who treated me like I was some sort of cheap prize. If Connor tries to kiss me, then definitely it's a date. Otherwise, I'll have to ask Lorena. She knows about these kinds of things.
So, tell me about yourself, Julia.
What do you want to know?
Where you're from, what you like, what your favorite color is. You know, boring stuff like that.
I'm from Chicago. I like books, pizza, and David Bowie. My favorite color is red. Your turn.
But where are you from?
I'm from Chicago. I just told you.
No, what I mean is... forget it.
Connor looks embarrassed. You mean you want to know my ethnicity? What kind of brown I am?
Yeah, I guess.
Connor smiles apologetically. I'm Mexican. You could have just asked, you know. I can't help but smirk. I prefer it when people are straightforward.
Yeah, I see your point. Sorry.
Don't worry about it. It's cool. What about you, though? Where are you from? What are you into?
Evanston, burgers, and drums.
But where are you from? Connor laughs.
I'm a typical American mutt. German, Irish, Italian, and...
Wait, let me guess. Your great-grandmother was a Cherokee princess.
No, I was going to say Spanish.
Ah, yes, our conquerors. And your favorite color?
Yellow.
Yellow? Gross, man.
Whoa, tell me how you really feel.
He laughs.
Yellow like the sun. You can't tell me you hate the sun.
Of course not. I'm not a monster. A man with a neck beard sits down next to the mustache guy. What a perfect pair.
If you are, you're the cutest monster I've ever seen.
I don't know what to say, so I take a big gulp of coffee that burns my mouth and throat. Smooth. Have you ever read The Yellow Wallpaper? Ever hear of yellow fever? Jaundice? Yellow can be bad news, is all I'm saying. Connor's eyes crinkle when he smiles, which I think is kind of charming.
Tell me more. Any other strong opinions on colors? Shapes? Patterns? I have a feeling you're a very interesting person.
Me?
No, that mustachioed dude over there,
he says, pointing. The man looks over at us, outraged, which makes me laugh so hard I nearly spit out my coffee. I think paisley is detestable and should be banned until the end of time. Same goes for pastel-colored clothing. Oh, and khakis are repugnant. I close my eyes and stick out my tongue to show my disgust. The moment seems almost surreal.
I picture myself watching us from another table. I've never been in a coffee shop like this.